Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller, sitting in for Ian Masters. Ian is overseas for the screening of a controversial film he made for the BBC 40 years ago about the Sydney Opera House. It was willfully destroyed, but has since been resurrected. Despite his absence, we have a terrific lineup for you today. We start with Mehdi Samati from Northern Illinois University on Iranian-US relations and the recent standoff at the UN. Then we turn to Mexico, where freelance reporter and photographer Jennifer Collins gives us the scoop on attempts to reform the Mexican economy and resistance to such initiatives. And we finish up with Alan Tomlinson of the University of Brighton, who takes us on a tour of the World Cup, its triumphs and its travails. Joining us now is Mehdi Samati, a professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Illinois University. He's the author of several books, including Media, Culture and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. His research interests include international and global communication, cultural politics of globalization, race and media cultures, and Iranian media and culture. Welcome to the program, Mehdi Samati.
Thank you very much.
It's great to speak with you. Well, there's so much to talk about, but I'd like to begin, if I could, by asking you what's happening right now in U.S.-Iranian relations in the light of what went on or didn't go on at the United Nations?
Right now the Iranian delegation in Geneva are talking to the European delegation and the United States, the so-called 5+1, and that includes United States, UK, Russia, France, China, and Germany. And this comes after the visit by the new Iranian president, and he was here in the U.S., and he was on what was billed as a charm offensive by Western media, and he appeared to say all the right things, and he offered to essentially restart the negotiations with the West over Iranian nuclear activities. And from what I just read, in fact, the press reported on the meeting that they had, and the European foreign policy chief had characterized this latest round of talks as fruitful and forward-looking, and other press outlets have characterized the talks as serious and substantive. And the Iranian foreign minister was very positive. All in all, it appears that things are going well in Geneva. The Iranian foreign minister yesterday had a presentation in which basically offered a roadmap of a sort for moving forward. Iran has claimed that it wishes to resolve the issue within a year time frame, and the West is eager to test that position, and it appears so far that things are going well, and I haven't heard, you know, anybody saying that so far. The usual detractors, you know, have been quite muted about what's happening, you know, right now. So things are looking good.
In terms of Mr. Rouhani, how do you regard his presidency? For many in the West, he's seen as comparatively liberal and the kind of person that so-called liberal capitalist Democrats can talk to.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you are aware, after 8 years of presidency by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, a disastrous 8 years, I might add, and many would agree with that, he came to the office with a rather large mandate. He won without going to the runoff, the first round, and he's been basically promoting a platform of moderation and rational governance, and that kind of rhetoric. He is a Western educated. He has a PhD in law from Scotland, I believe. And he is not the usual type of, you know, reformer politician in Iran, in the sense that he has deep ties to the entire political system in Iran. He comes from deep within that system, and for him to take up the mantle of, you know, reform and essentially reversing of several years of belligerency of the previous president is rather remarkable in the sense that he is an insider. So, and he has the backing of the supreme leader of the Islamic Republic, and he has signaled in different ways that he has his, you know, he has the backing of the supreme leader. And in fact, when he returned to Iran, one would have expected after the phone call he had with the president of the United States, and that shook up, because this was the first in since the Islamic since the revolution of 1979, it shook up many also conservatives in Iran. But by and large, the responses, you know, were, even by this also conservatives, muted, and 230 members of parliament of Majlis in Iran signed a letter of support. And this is a parliament that's dominated by conservatives. So it looks like he has the mandate, and he has the right temperament, and it looks like rhetoric and even the kind of mindset that would take to essentially compromise or do a deal with the West,
yeah,
where basically parties could accept each other's coexistence.
So what this suggests, Mehdi Samati, is that given that he is the consummate insider, even as he's a very cosmopolitan international person, the elites, both on the religious and the political side, if I can divide them in that way, have had enough of the effect of both the rhetoric and conduct of Ahmadinejad, but also of the way that the sanctions have hurt the Iranian economy. Would you agree with that reading, or would you give us a different account?
Actually, I would take a different, I would suggest a different, you know, reading of the Iranian situation. I mean, those who have been promoting the sanctions are reading Rouhani's position and the position of the supreme leader as basically the positive effect of the sanctions. But a contrarian view would say that if we look at the current situation and say that Iran doesn't have time on its side because of the economic hardship, that would be, I think, you know, that would be a mistake. You know, Iranian economy has been hurt. Yes, it has been mismanaged more than anything else. But, you know, in comparing Iran and the economic growth, basically, we had an economic activity that declined by, you know, somewhere along the line of 2.9%. Unemployment is high, but compared to, say, Greece and Spain, is not bad. If we were to look at, let's say, you know, per capita income in Iran, let's say 30% below Turkey, but 50% above Egypt, you know, it's not as dire as others make it out to be. In fact, well, at least it cannot be used as, you know, the only, as a leverage to sort of deny Rouhani and his supporters this diplomatic window. I don't think the West does not have, in my judgment, the West does not have time on its side. Iran does. Because if under those severe sanctions, Iran can maintain this level of, you know, economic activity, yes, the Iranian currency has collapsed, but that does not mean the collapse of an economic system, especially now that we have a business-friendly administration, especially now that we have an economic team advising President Rouhani. These are fairly competent individuals and professionals, bureaucrats. They probably will, you know, Iran will pull through, you know, but so we shouldn't read the willingness to negotiate with the West as an imminent sign of the collapse of an economic system. That would be wrong. Yes, we could say that those sanctions have been, you know, hurting Iranian economy, but more than anything else, you know, the pressure has been on probably ordinary Iranians more than on the political system in Iran. So we should look for other reasons as to why Rouhani, you know, and Supreme Leader would, you know, come to the negotiating table.
I'm speaking with Mehdi Samati, professor in communication at Northern Illinois University and the author, amongst others, of the book Media, Culture and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. Mehdi, what do you think are the principal reasons then why the Supreme Leader and President Rouhani are putting out this hand of, shall we say, friendship?
There are a confluence of reasons and motivations. One would be the easing of, you know, this, you know, sanctions. That's one factor. But I think, you know, it's probably wiser to look at the overall strategic position that the Islamic Republic is occupying in the Middle East and globally. I think they have come to the realization that for at least, if nothing else, for the survival of the, you know, Islamic Republic, for essentially being able to compete with Israel in the region, for being the hegemonic power, you know, bloc. And internally, Iranian population is a very cosmopolitan, you know, population. Their literacy rate is high. Iran, even though the Islamic Republic tries to limit its access to information and outside world, is a very information-rich environment, whether through blogs, satellite television, and other forms of communication with the outside world. The highly literate population has been through quite a bit for the past two decades, shall we say, and the system cannot maintain itself. And I think it's, at the end of the day, it's their strategic interest to pull back from this adversarial relationship that they have with the West. And setting aside the label Islamic, you could explain quite a lot of the kinds of alliances that the Islamic Republic has made, you know, in the past, you know, three decades. We tend to sort of read characterization of Iranian society as, you know, a rogue nation, a totalitarian state. These labels do not explain Iran, and they serve an over, you know, arching ideological, you know, purpose for the West and the enemies of, you know, the Islamic Republic, but they don't really explain Iran. So I think, as you know, at the end of the day, these factors having to address the economic system, trying to maintain forward-looking, you know, a strategic outlook where Iran could compete with Israel and other, you know, regional actors and the United States. These factors better explain than, you know, a simple narrative of the economic system is collapsing in Iran, and that's why they're coming to the negotiating table.
Mehdi, you mentioned there the very rich environment for information in Iran, despite attempts to control it. I wonder if you could speak about that in terms of alternative media use. We might speak later about mainstream media coverage in both nations, but there's been a lot of excitement and rhetoric here in the, in inverted commas, West, about the Green Revolution and about notions of alternative media use in Iran over the last few years. What's your take?
Well, if you are referring to the so-called, say, Twitter revolution in Iran, and even recently talks about, you know, Facebook diplomacy, those tend to be exaggerated. However, it does not mean that Iranian communication technologies are not enabling forms of assembly that the state couldn't control. And so there is, you know, thanks to a highly entrepreneurial sort of spirit by a lot of young people in Iran, there has been this explosion of ISPs, internet service providers, and lots of economic activities around IT in Iran. And so people are connected. I was recently there a couple months ago, and even cell phones these days, anywhere you go, you're not far from a Wi-Fi, you know, a zone, hotspot, and people have Wi-Fi generators, you know, in ways that I hadn't, you know, seen before. And I use my iPhone with few apps to connect to, you know, talk to and actually chat using various apps, you know, with colleagues, friends, and family in Iran. So we heard quite a bit of rhetoric, and we saw a lot of excitement about Twitter in Iran. But I think it's the infrastructure in Iran that allows Iranians to bypass any attempts at censorship. And generally, this outlook that Iranians have, and that's been in the making ever since the middle of the 1990s, where people are, you know, not afraid of trying these new gadgets and these technologies. So they have access to technology. The younger people, especially, you know, in Iran right now, we have this a policy of basically, for example, to just give you an example, Facebook and Twitter, you know, as two examples, where the state policy is that, you know, they are not banning access to these, you know, it's not against the law to have a Facebook account. But Facebook is being filtered in Iran. What makes access to it illegal is a use of, you know, a filtering or anti-filtering software. So it's a weird system where, you know, Iranian foreign minister has a Facebook page and he communicates, you know, they have, the president of Iran has a Twitter account, but then the population itself is not allowed to use it directly. But then people use anti-filtering software. And what was interesting recently is that the president of Twitter asked President Rouhani of Iran in a tweet that, will your nation be able to soon, you know, enjoy this service that we offer? And his response was that, I'm working on it, basically. So we have these, you know, it's a context where the infrastructure is there, and there are conflicting attitudes and laws about these technologies, but people have access to them.
Mehdi Zamati, we're going to have to wind up there. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
Mehdi Zamati is a professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Illinois University. His books include Media, Culture, and Society in Iran, Living with Globalization and the Islamic State. We'll take a break for station identification and then be back with Jennifer Collins talking about attempts to reform the Mexican economy. از خونه